So what you've got is uneducated people, poor kids with an AK-47, doesn't know how to use it properly, enters more killings, enters, and the violence has gone out of control. But that is a situation. So it's like probably got into Sierra Leone now in the bad days of the West Side Boys. That's how it is right now. Those gangs are no different to what they are. Like Julie says, they don't want to be in it. They've got no choice. But the amount of weapons out there now, it's going to take a proper military-style force to squash that now.
How can I help? How can I be useful in ending needless suffering? Do not be afraid of work that has no end.
We have to organize a social movement.
We have an opportunity to lead by example versus just talking, hot air. I think the more people in this fight, the more we grow. Eventually it could change. Yeah, the people are the ones that can make the change.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to Change Agents, an Ironclad original. Let me ask you a question. When was the last time you heard about Haiti? Maybe a better question. When was the last time that you heard about Haiti that didn't some way, shape, or form revolve around a natural disaster? For myself, I don't know if I can ever actually remember hearing a news story about Haiti that didn't involve tragedy and heartbreak and suffering. My guest today, Mark Billy Billingham and his wonderful wife, Julie Billingham, of course, met in Haiti, of all places. Both of them drawn there because they wanted to make a difference. They saw news reporting about an earthquake back in 2010 that really the only descriptive word would be literally tore the country apart, especially the middle class, and met each other while there in that disaster zone. A little bit about Billy. He was in the British military for 27 years. 17 of those were with the SAS. And I bring that up to say that he's traveled the world and seen his fair share of things other than first world living conditions. His wife, Julie, the founder and CEO of Rebuild Globally. She's very well known in the nonprofit world, got her MBA from the Rollins Krumer Graduate School of Business, and has been working in this space for quite some time. So joining me today to talk about their experiences in Haiti and Rebuild Globally. Now, the goal of Rebuild Globally is to promote prosperity by growing an educated and skilled workforce in Haiti, ensuring a pathway to dignified employment and everything that comes from having some level of commerce inside of a country itself. We get into that in the episode. What they have going on there is pretty amazing. They're training and empowering what I'm going to call artisans to professionally handcraft beautiful leather bags, sandals, and jewelry from responsibly sourced materials. And their goal is to create empowering jobs in Haiti and share the island's incredible craftsmanship with the world. Let's get into it. Today's episode of Change Agents, again, is with Billy and Julie Billingham. I mean, there's only one question to start it off with, and that's how you two found each other. How'd you guys meet?
Right. So I'll start
off. I was going to say, there are two versions. Yes. Which one's, whoever has the better version, you need to go second.
Okay.
Oh, I'll let you go second then. So it was 2010. I was in Iraq working as a contractor, basically in the company that I part owned, Sabre International. You may have heard of it, a security company. And it was, I remember the night exactly. It was January the 10th, 2010, and we'd been out on the streets as normal. Went back to the bar that night, and there was a news flash. And like when a news flash normally comes on, we're having a drink, everybody stops, looks at what's going on in the world, and there's a place called Haiti. It had an earthquake. Never heard of Haiti before. Okay, another earthquake, so what? You know, took no notice. But what caught my eye was the number that came up. The earthquake had only happened a couple of hours, and I remember seeing something like 50,000 people dead or missing. 50,000, that number. And now, bearing in mind, I'm in Iraq, and we're used to people getting killed every day, unfortunately, you know. But the numbers just didn't tally up. So that caught our attention for a little bit longer than normal. And anyway, through the night, we carried on drinking. The newsflash came up again. And eventually, we're looking at numbers of 200,000 plus people. So I went to bed that night, couldn't really sleep, and all the rest of it, thinking about all this. And bearing in mind, we were a security company, all ex-military. But we have a very big passion for charity and helping people where help is needed, no matter where it is around the globe, of course. And to that extent, I couldn't sleep that night. I got up in the middle of the night, went downstairs to make a coffee in the little canteen we had. Sorry, the dog's growling and chewing away at the bottom.
No worries, man.
Yeah. So I go down there. It's about 5 a.m. I noticed my business partner was there. And he said, you're thinking about Haiti, aren't you? I went, yeah, we should do something. He said, you're right, we should do something. Long story short, so we did some due diligence, all the rest of it, and realized, right, no point sending money because we don't know where it's going to go. I'll physically go over there, see what we can do. And at the time, we were building, like many companies were, camps for the military out of porter cabins, you know, and all this. So I come out with this idea. I spoke to a doctor who was on the ground in Haiti, who got out there and said, Billy, we need everything. No one will go in buildings. He'd literally just done an operation, took a little boy's legs off on a door inside a tent. You know, they had nothing. Wow. He says, we need hospitals. I says, I've got an idea. So I went back to the drawing board, me and my business partner, got the team together, said, look, design me an hospital. So we designed this hospital out of porter cabins, of 47 porter cabins. And we're going to invest the time, the money to rent an Antonov, fly it into Port-au-Prince. I'll go in, take a couple of engineers, get the locals involved to build it so they've got a job straight away and their mind's off the situation. And that was the plan. Anyway, that didn't quite go to plan because we couldn't land on the runway anyway. It was smashed. So the second plan was, I'll fly into Haiti. I'll get somebody to take the donation. I'll fly into Haiti, get it shipped to me. I'll get the team together. And so that was the plan. So that's what I ended up doing. And it took a lot longer than expected. So in that period of me waiting for the shipment to arrive, meet the right people to take on this charity donation that it was going to be, I was living on the United Nations base in a tent, you know, a little 2-foot tent like everybody, you know, it was pretty rough at the time. And the sort of donation went from pillar to post. He found out that the charity, I won't name them, that supposedly can do all this, can do all that, they couldn't do it. They kind of lied to me. So I'm now sat in Port-au-Prince in a tent, shipment on its way, costing me a lot of money, and I've got no one to give it to. And again, a long story short, I end up bumping into Sean Penn, who was a friend of mine through working in the film industry. And he said, look, I'll take your donation. Whenever it comes in, we'll do it. And we'll build a school. We ended up building a school rather than a hospital and a clinic, which was amazing. And it's so, you know, it was on a piece of ground where there was over 50,000 displaced people. I don't say refugees because they were displaced. They had no houses, living on top. So it became the call, the School of Hope. And it was used by thousands of kids. And Sean ran it really, really well. And the other part of the donation became a clinic. So that in mind, that's why I was there in Port-au-Prince. And I was there for longer than expected. And then one day I'm walking for the UN base and I see this hot-looking girl walking towards me, stalking me. I could tell she was stalking me.
Obviously, she'd been doing reconnaissance on you for a long time.
Absolutely. She was there the same time as me, a few days after the earthquake.
We landed on the same day, actually.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so I noticed coming through the camp, I caught eye with her a couple of times, and then she was living outside the camp. And then swiftly, she moved into the camp. I thought, oh, yes, I get it. So I knew I was being stoned.
Not because of him, because they had running water at the UN.
And I mean, you can say whatever you want. We, you know, Billy and I understand the real reason.
And do you know? We know when we're being stoked, mate. Yeah. Yeah. It was like a sniper. Anyway, she sniped me and stalked me for a while. We got chatting and I could see this girl was, she was a heart on legs. She was there so emotional, so passionate about being there and why she was there. And to be honest, you qualified to the yin yang in terms of education, qualifications, what she wanted to do, but no idea what she was doing. It was a tough place, you know, it was hard, there was a bit of danger. I'm joking, but yeah. You know, so I loved her passion. I had my reasons for being there. And over a period of time, we kind of bonded along with a bunch of other people who were there for the right reasons. And it went from there. And then that friendship turned into, you know, becoming partners, basically. And that's, long story short, exactly how we met. And at the time, she had a dream of building a charity. And you, like I am, you probably being a military guy as well, we've been all around the globe. You see all these horrible things and you realize how important helping people is. And I don't like the word charity, but charity, you know, it's so important.
Yeah.
But I never really understood it deeply. You know, I'd run, I'd fight for charity, I've raised money, I've done this. I never really followed it all the way through. And then I sat down with her one night, she was talking about charity and what it really meant. You know, and it, of course, it's about giving. And she kind of educated me to, it's about giving your time, you know, your experience, your knowledge. Also, if finances, if you can, give to help people that needed help. Because the people of Haiti, they didn't want clothes. They didn't want food. They wanted jobs.
So you only can help to like a certain point, but like nobody wants to be a beneficiary of charity for the rest of their life. So what we were seeing is, you know, how do we reconcile the immediate disaster response and what had to happen versus long-term development? And I heard someone say, and to be honest, it might've been Sean, that like the thing that, you know, devastated Haiti before the earthquake was the long-term extreme poverty that, you know, just suffocated the country. 50% of the people can't read. 1% are university educated. I mean, like these statistics are notable and they mean something. And at the end of the day, it means financial insecurity for almost everyone. And at that point, you know, you're strangled by that. So we thought, okay, the charity and our charity that we started together, Rebuild Globally, was going to tackle that first part, the education and job training. But then we would think, okay, long-term is the business. And that's kind of, and all you did was ask us how we met. And now here we are. This is what we do.
Let's get into what you guys have going on and in the path of doing so. Fill me in from 2010 up to 2023. So what have you seen in Haiti being there? How did they recover from that earthquake? And what's the current situation going on in Haiti? And that we can tie it into what you guys have going on now.
Sure. You want me to take this one?
Yeah.
So basically, you know, like I said earlier, the poverty that has, you know, circumnavigated the country, you know, still persists today. We've suffered from political challenges, you know, the assassination of the president, the pandemic. I mean, all of these things that happened to the rest of the world, they were magnetized in Haiti because of the presidential assassination 2 years ago. And so poverty still, you know, is the biggest struggle. You know, people, the greatest GDP in Haiti is charities and NGOs. There's no economy. There's no infrastructure. I always said if, you know, we wanted something, we'd have to build it ourselves because there was nothing that existed there. You know what I'm saying? As far as like systems go. So it's a really hard place to operate. I don't want to sugarcoat that. As beautiful as it is, it's a very hard place to operate.
Has it gotten worse since the assassination?
Oh yeah. Because
it's the worst it's ever been.
Yeah. Essentially the assassination, it was like a coup d'etat, you know, but nobody came in to take over governing. So the gangs have risen.
So power vacuum.
Yes.
Awesome. That must make things just great on the ground.
It's just like that. To be honest, we haven't been back since November because when we were there in November, you know, you can feel it's so different. I felt like we were making our team members more vulnerable, you know, kidnappings. I mean, even just this year, it's what, just half the year is gone. There's been over 1,000 people kidnapped. I know that in the news right now, there's an American woman who was recently kidnapped and her baby, and that's been main news. But 1,000 people, men, women, and children have been kidnapped just this year alone. And
in 2023? You know,
yes.
And we just flipped. Yeah. I was going to say, we just flipped into August. So yeah, 8 months. Wow.
It's crazy. The amount of, I mean, they're kidnapping school children, people walking on the way to work. I mean, for ransoms, it's become a business. It's a business. And, you know, whenever we talk, I always like to say, you know, I'm a foreigner. I'm a guest in the country of Haiti. So whatever I say, please take with a grain of salt. I'm not Haitian. But I am somebody who loves and respects the country and has a business there. And I always like to say that, you know, when you're looking at these like gang memberships, and if you're seeing on television these young kids with these guns looking all angry, I want you to know that it's not a choice. If you're living in extreme poverty and a gang leader says, you know, like your mom doesn't have clean water, well, you can join us and I'll make sure your mom has clean water. I'll make sure no one in your family is raped, you know, blah, blah, blah. These kids have no choice. There's truly no choice. And that is why the gangs are so powerful right now, because again, of the extreme poverty. This is our root problem. And so to me, economy is truly the only way to tackle, you know, obviously poverty, but violence, gangs.
Yeah, but I mean, the physical situation on the ground is probably worse than it's ever been, mate. You know, from the time we got there after the earthquake, obviously everybody was sort of pulling together everybody was in the same boat. You know, lost people, lost buildings. So everybody's pulling together, trying to rebuild. There was people coming in, trying to bring in business, all the rest of it. Then the usual corruption through the government has always seems to happen, slowed that process down. Then it broke down. Then there was assassination of the president, as Jules said. But what I remember from the days of being there and running a business, I built an hotel there, I did all sorts of stuff, built hospitals, we did all sorts of stuff there, was there was always some sort of protest. And, you know, people say it was a riot. It wasn't really a riot. They're not very well-educated people, so the only way they know to get their message out is by blocking the roads, lighting tires on fire. But it's a slow process to educate people. That's probably not the best way to do it. So that was starting to work and break it down a little bit, less protesting, if you like. But then after the assassination of the president, which to this day I find very weird and strange that that even took place and how it took place without some sort of intervention, I don't know. And then what I've noticed over the last year and a half is the influx of weapons. There weren't so many weapons out there.
Interesting.
You know, yeah, there was no way. If I know there weren't, I know where weapons were. I was out there a long time. And a couple of rich people had weapons here and there. But now, since the last year and a half, there's a massive influence of AK-47s. They've come in from somewhere.
Yeah.
Now, so what you've got is uneducated people, poor kids with an AK-47, doesn't know how to use it properly, enters more killings, and the violence has gone out of control. But it's like probably going into Sierra Leone now in the bad days of the West Side Boys. That's how it is right now. Those gangs are no different to what they are. Like Julie says, they don't want to be in it. They've got no choice. But the amount of weapons out there now, it's going to take a proper military-style force to squash that now.
And he has no army.
Yeah. And that was interesting after that. I remember I was quite close with the presidential election as it was going on before Martelly got into power. And they came to see me and we had meetings with myself and my American brothers over there at the time, military guys, asking about forming a new army and what would it be and how. And of course, we were all for it. So, you know, it's not all for war fighting. You're not war fighting anyway. You can have construction, you build your roads yourself, and there's jobs for people. So it all made sense. And it was all going through to a point. And it got stopped, not interested. It just died on the table overnight. And we're like, okay. But that was a governmental decision, which was wrong, of course, I believe anyway. You wouldn't have the issues they have today. But yeah, so that's the situation as it is now today. So it kind of went. I had a lot of hope, was growing, flattened out a bit, grew a bit, then dropped completely. And now it's total chaos. It's worse than, you know, the West Side Boys of Sierra Leone. It's worse than Baghdad after the fall of Saddam and all the rest of it when he went into total, you know, sporadic groups of terrorists. Now these are just, well, they're terrorists, I suppose. They're gangs, but armed to the teeth with AK-47s, which they have no idea how to use properly. And it's the reason the violence has gotten so high.
Hey, everyone. Andy Stumpf here, the host of the Ironclad Original Change Agents podcast. In addition to producing podcasts like Change Agents, Danger Close with Jack Carr, Oil and Whiskey with Roadster Shop, and others, Ironclad also works with some of the world's biggest brands like Mechanics Wear, Under Armour, the Navy SEAL Foundation, Anthem, and a ton of others to create industry-leading custom film series, commercials, podcasts, and more. We can also get your message in front of an audience of millions by placing it on podcasts and series just like this one. To check out more about Ironclad and see how they can help you elevate your company, brand, or business, check out thisisironclad.com. Thisisironclad.com. All right, so tell me about the business that you guys have set up there, what it's trying to do. Obviously, it's run by women because, as Billy would agree, women are generally smarter than us in every respect, so it's probably a good call there. But where did the idea come from? What do they have doing, and what are you trying to do with the organization?
Yeah, so, like Billy was saying earlier, you know, we started with Rebuild Globally, our charity, doing education and job training. And as, you know, the kids started becoming young adults and wanted to go to college and all these things, I was like, my gosh, wanted jobs. like, you know, we tried to find places to, you know, put them for jobs. And so we just realized, like, my gosh, we're gonna have to build it ourselves. And so we were making sandals out of tires, because back in the day, no one had any footwear. And as Billy was alluding to earlier, tires were being burned. Yeah, here's a pair right there. And so we were literally taking tires off the streets and making them into footwear. And our customers were, like, you know, people who worked for the UN. There were tons of visitors back in the day, tons of relief workers. And we were making this, like, you know, we were like, wow, we, like, actually have a little business here. And so we started with this tire sandal business. And now over the years, over the past decade, we've developed into making, you know, fine leather goods. So during COVID, when the government mandated we close our factory, we went into the countryside. We learned the technique of Haitian basket weaving. We brought that back into the factory using locally sourced leathers, dead stock leathers, and we made our factory solar powered. You know, we wanted to do no harm, as much good as we could. Our main mission is just to create jobs. We have about 50 people working at the factory now. A lot of graduates from our program, and then just other people in the community who need jobs. And we can become more successful by the more we sell, the more jobs we can create. And my goal right now is to create 350 new jobs by 2026.
So, Andy, basically what they do, they
take out the plastic.
Yeah, it's handmade leather goods, and they are absolutely fantastic. What we did, we bought the top of the range leather stuff, looked at how they were made, and got the artisans who've all come through our program to make them. And I mean, these are the ladies' bags. I mean, it doesn't show that much right there.
You can get an idea, but you can see the texture and contour of that.
You know, but, and then I designed a men's line.
He did.
And mate, you'll like this. I'm
a merce line?
A men's line for travel.
Yeah, merce. A men's purse.
Yeah.
It's a Claymore bag.
Oh, I love that. A leather Claymore bag? Those are the best bags ever.
Yeah, so going through the airport, all your stuff goes in there straight into the security and straight through.
If I can just brag about him for a second. So basically, you know, Billy's career has taken this wild turn, and he started, you know, doing SAS Who Dares Wins in the UK. And then it got really popular, and America bought it, and they started Special Forces. And when the show was launching in America, you know, Billy always thinks, how can I use my platform to help support our work in Haiti? And historically, Deme, our company, has always been, you know, making women's handbags and things for women. And Billy said, you know what I want? He wanted this duffel bag, and he'd been talking about it for years. He wants this duffel bag, blah, 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 blah. And so finally we said, well, why don't we design it ourselves, and we'll launch it with the launch of your new show in America. And it was really amazing. So he created a 9-piece, like, travel accessory line, mostly for men.
Yeah.
And we were able to, you know, reach a whole new audience of customers, and it's been amazing. And so create more jobs because of that. And, you know, you got, I don't know if you know this, but Ironclad actually helped us. We formed the Deme Academy to really focus on handmade leather goods. And Ironclad gave us the last $4,000 we needed to meet that campaign goal.
That's awesome.
It was incredible. And the kids went through, the young adults went through a 3-month paid job training program to learn to be leather workers for this line. It was amazing.
That is amazing. So you're employing 50 people right now. Is there any threat to the business in Haiti right now, given the situation?
Yeah, unfortunately, we're probably one of the only factories still open.
Target on your back a little bit, unfortunately.
Totally. We've had a few people temporarily resign because they're too scared to walk to work every day. So we've done different things, you know, change work hours. You know, obviously you change payday. You do what you can to keep the team safe. Everybody, there's an internal, like, warning system. Everybody, if you can get to work, you can. If you can't, you don't. And there's no punishment. There's no repercussions or whatever. Everybody just does their best. But the cost of doing business has about tripled. So when the gangs took over the port, at one point we were paying $33 a gallon for a gallon of petrol. And even though our factory is solar powered, you know, we still have a bus that picks up craftspeople, you know, so there's still costs. The lunch costs have tripled, you know, so just like, if I were just a businesswoman, the smart thing would have been to take the factory out of Haiti and move it, like, to the Dominican Republic or something, you know, on the other side of the island. But our mission is to create great jobs in Haiti. And so we're sticking strong, you know, to our mission. We're working every day. I did make the decision last October to close the factory because I hadn't slept in about a month. I was so scared that someone was going to get raped or kidnapped, or, you know, someone was going to burn down the factory. And about 10 days after I closed the factory, our leadership team called and just said, Julie, like, the factory is an oasis of solar power. People can charge their phones. They can get clean water. We have community. We have our jobs. Like, you have to change your mind. And I, you know, we're co-owned, so I only get one vote anyways. And so, I mean, I did use the iron thumb when I was so scared for everybody's safety. But and then we just said, okay, I have no right to make this decision. I'm 700 miles away. They don't even want me to come there because, you know, everybody thinks I might jeopardize the factory more being a foreigner. So how dare I make a decision for 50 other families when I'm safely sitting here in my home? So the Haitian leadership team makes those decisions on whether or not the factory is open or not. And so far it's been open. And I mean, we have actually so many orders because we're one of the only factories still open. We can barely keep up, which is amazing. We just can't find enough staff because people are too scared, you know, to go outside of their homes. So yeah, it's made things incredibly difficult, incredibly expensive, and incredibly dangerous.
Where can people find out about these products? I'm assuming there's an internet portal of some degree that can
better believe them. It.
All right.
Yeah. Yes, we've got a great website.
Let's sell this shit. Where can we send people to?
Please, like, sell this shit, please.
Yeah. I'll walk right through the airport with a leather Claymore bag because those things are awesome. I used to steal those every time we did Claymore training.
Yeah, we did as well.
Yeah.
And that's where I came from.
One of my deepest regrets that I never got to use one for real because those suckers, I was just scared of them for clarity because we were always briefed on the back blast. So I would at least be several buildings deep if I ever got the chance, but I never did. It's a lost opportunity. Are you looking for a change agent in the energy space? Look no further. Ketone IQ is a category leader. Fuel does not need to be filled with caffeine and sugar. HVMN is changing the narrative. No sugar, no caffeine, no BS. It's just calm, clean energy on demand that improves performance and cognition. HVMN was awarded a $6 million Phase 2 STTR by the U.S. Special Operations Command to produce a ketone-based product that would improve performance at altitude and protect against cognitive loss in hypoxic environments. I'll be honest with you, the flavor is rough. But what's real is the energy, the sustained energy that you will get when you take Ketone IQ. Actually, probably my favorite thing about it, though, beyond the energy that you get from it, or in addition to the energy that you get from it, is its size. I mean, you can stuff a couple of these in your backpack. It's not bulky. It's not a full-size drink. Throw it in your bag. Take one when you need it, and you're off and running with clean, sustained energy. Please go check out our partner, HVMN, the brand behind Ketone IQ, at hvmn.com/changeagents. I'll hit you with that one more time. Let's do it military phonetically. HotelVictorMikeNovember.com/changeagents. Still got it. It's no big deal. To receive 30% off your first subscription order of Ketone IQ. Where can we point people? Where can people find the products, the artisan products that are being made in Haiti?
At the website, demain.com, and it's DEUXMAINS.com. And just so you know, in Creole, demain means two hands. And the reason we named our company that is because, one, we make everything by hand, but second, anything that we wanted, we had to build by ourselves. So we just appropriately named our company demain, two hands.
I love it. And you also have Rebuild Globally. So fill me in a little bit more on the kind of the architecture and structure of that as well.
Yeah. And so if anybody is interested in making a charitable donation, Rebuild Globally is our charity. It is 100% run off of the kindness and generous gifts of others. And it pays for education and job training. We don't have our own school. We support the schools in the community. But what we do is we fill in the gaps in some of the educational curriculum in Haiti. So in our programs, we teach team building, critical thinking, you know, some things that are missing. And then another fun fact about Haiti is that a lot of the schools are taught in Creole, but the national exam is in French. So it puts students at a wild disadvantage to not pass the national exams, which means they can't move on to the next level. So all of the Rebuild Globally students take mandatory French classes and we ace our exams every year. So, awesome. And then it goes into paid job training, like Billy was talking about earlier. Once you graduate high school, you go into our paid job training program. And at Demain, we have a university matching program. So the kids, if they go to school, they have flexible work hours, and they also, any dollar that they make at work, we match that 100%. so they can go to school. So it really is just about breaking these like barriers to success. You know, like that's why we don't pay for college, because we feel like, look, you're a young adult now. And we went around the table and I said, okay, how did I go to school? Well, I had three jobs, but I did have a scholarship. I had this. So we just try to think, okay, how can we build systems that worked for us as young people, for the young people that we're working with now, in a respectful manner? And that's how we did it. When they're kids, yes, you should pay for them to go to school. No kid should have to work. They should get to go to school. So we pay for that. Fine. No problem. They do good. They do their job. Great. Then they go to the job training. And this is why we pay, because we think it's important for kids to earn, the young people to earn money and to make their own way.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. There's a point in time where giving people things for free actually becomes counterproductive, because they have less of sense. They have less of a sense of buy-in. And again, I think it speaks to the difference in the culture here in the U.S. in what you guys are trying to do to make sure that those young people, as they grow into their adulthood, are earning, as opposed to being gifted, what it is that they have. It just, I look at the things in my own life. Not that I don't value things that people give to me, but if I don't have any sweat equity in it, it's very hard to even the care or the level of value that it has to me. The things that I've worked the hardest for are the ones that I value the most. And it goes right back to your, you know, your Amazon culture ideology. Like, oh, I clicked a button and it just needs to show up. And if you can do that all the time, every day, for everything that you want, then nothing ends up having any value.
It's true.
Yeah, it's true.
What is what's the population of Haiti?
They say 11 million. They haven't had like a formal census in a long time, but that's word on the street, 11 million.
Is there anybody looking at a way to remove the gangs from their power and instill or help self-grow a different leadership model? Because, you know, Billy and I have seen it firsthand overseas in third world countries. If you rule with an AK, it's not that you can't get stuff done, but there's certainly a limit to where you can go with your country and the future of your country if that's how you're ruling. Is there anybody else looking at that?
I mean, I wish I knew more about the inner works and like the politics behind it, but I can tell you this, like there's a police force of 9,000 in Haiti. Could you imagine 9,000 police officers for a population of 11 million? I mean, they're wildly understaffed, wildly mistreated, underpaid, you know, if you can imagine the whole thing. And not to mention their families have become targets of gang members now too, because they don't want any interference. I mean, they are not set up for success. And we'd heard about 72 hours ago that Kenya is going to be leading a charge to come into Haiti alongside with support of others, you know, maybe
sort of military force.
Yes. Yeah. You know, to help. But we've been hearing, this is, you know, maybe it's happening. I hope to God it's happening. We need an intervention, but we've been hearing this for a year now and nothing's come to fruition. So I don't understand why. I mean, it's 700 miles off the coast of Florida. I don't understand why. And we have the second largest U.S. embassies in Haiti. Yeah. So it doesn't really make sense to me, but I don't have the inner workings to help answer that question intelligently. But
unfortunately, my suspicion is that as a country, we have nothing to gain from the perspective of a natural resource. You know what I mean? Like my opinions of U.S. foreign policy have shifted as I've, you know, went from an 18-year-old wanting to join the military to my mid-40s. And I do believe, I do believe that at the end of the day, the vast majority of Americans would 100% stand behind a cause that is trying to make a difference for the right reasons. I worry about the people who are elected into positions of power in this country and specifically how long they're allowed to serve there, because it seems to me like they start serving their own self-interests and they probably don't view Haiti as one that has the reward that they're looking for.
100%.
Yeah, agree with that.
With you on that one.
Which sucks. You know,
it does suck.
Because then you get to lay in bed at night staring at the ceiling fan wondering what the hell you dedicated the younger portion of your life for.
This conversation regularly, mate. Yeah, you're right.
Well, that's why they have alcohol. It helps you go to sleep. You know, it solves all your problems.
we partake in that quite a bit in this house.
Physical training and alcohol.
Yeah.
What is it that you're seeing in Haiti that gives you the most hope?
It goes right back to the start, the resilience of the people. They'll never give up. They'll keep fighting. I'm pretty sure somewhere down the line, there will be an intervention force that will go in, smash these gangs down, and then give them another chance to get a decent, half-decent governing power and give people, you know, a better lifestyle than what they're getting right now. I mean, sadly to say that, you know, there's been this kidnapping recently. I'm saying sad. It is sad, but it's all of a sudden now. US have acknowledged it. UK are acknowledging it. The world's starting to acknowledge it. They're showing people with guns and the threats. So public opinion will be all for let's go in and do something. Now, I think that this, as bad as it is for them, is a good thing, because apparently, 8 months ago, there was 17 American citizens taken hostage, and there was all of a sudden no media about it. It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't.
And we were like, and there were children. And I know, and you know, if I'm in any country where American citizens, we do something about it. You know, the team are coming in, like we were. We covered any British national that was being taken anywhere. So it didn't make sense to me, and it still doesn't. I'm still going to get mad around the politics and what's really going on in Haiti, that they didn't react to 17 church-going American citizens being taken hostage for however long they had them. They had them quite a while. Nothing in the media, nothing anywhere. It wasn't making no sense to me, you know. And then all of a sudden now, there's an American female and a child been taken. It's all bang, it's in the news, and they're really onto it now. It's main topic in every country right now, which is a good thing for Haiti in the long run, because people are now looking in again, going, let's do something about this. But for those poor people that have been kidnapped, it's terrible, of course.
Yeah.
So that's where it is. But the hope is, the resilience of the people, this happening is kind of giving us hope that, right, let's speed this intervention up. Let's get in there and do something about this. Take these gangs out and at least, you know, get some sort of control of the country again.
You know, and I hope that my answer is not too self-serving, but like, you know, seeing, like, I just got a box delivered the other day from the factory of like these new handbags that they created, you know, and so just even seeing that people are still able to create something of beauty, like in the middle of all that chaos, to me, that's the Haiti I know and I love. And that's, you know, the Haiti that the people of Haiti deserve again. And so that kind of gives me, to be honest, there's no logical reason how we're still open. Like it doesn't make any sense that we're still able to operate amidst like essentially a civil war, but we are right in the center of Port-au-Prince. And yet every day we're open. To me, that's like, I have hope that we're, you know, that
again, sorry,
we'll make it.
Slightly off at a tangent here, but I mean, there's always surrealities with everything that goes on in these places of war, as you know, and a lot of it's down to the media. We're not really getting full media coverage of what is going on in Haiti. Of course, we see a bit of the riots here. We see kids with weapons and all the rest of it. But then on the other hand, so it's in total chaos. There's no control anywhere. Yet the Asian female football team have just flown to New Zealand to play soccer. So you think, how's that happening? Do you know what I mean? So yeah. There's the disinformation, disclarity of the frigging media. What is really going on? How bad is this? What's, you know, unless you're, we've been in places around the globe where, yeah, there's bad places, but they're talking like the whole world's on fire. No, it fucking isn't.
It's peace.
Yeah, there's battles over here, but there's normality going on that side of Bosnia, that side of Iraq. Do you know what I mean? So media coverage needs a shake up. I mean,
I almost think it needs to get scrubbed. And I would bet that there was a pre-existing advertising contract that existed for the World Cup, both the men's and females. So they were required contractually to cover that to the degree that they are, because at the end of the day, what people seem to consistently forget is that the media makes their money off of advertising. It's not based off of the actual information that they present. And I don't know when that detached, and maybe it never did. You know, maybe people talk about my dad, who's like 178 years old and likes to talk about life before electricity, or maybe that's me describing how he talks. But, you know, he talks about the media before it became corrupted. And I don't know. I think as long as there is advertising associated with it, and that they make their money based off the same rating system that like the Big Bang Theory and Friends and all that, it's all tied together. It's the same rating system. That's how they figure out what they charge. Until people wake up a little bit and recognize that, and then realize that what they are being shown, the commodity at this point is their attention.
Correct.
And it's just far too intimately and closely tied. That's why I love formats like this. We can talk about whatever the hell we want to say in whatever terms that we want to say them, and I don't give a shit what an advertiser says. You know, like, oh, you don't want to be involved? That's fine. Go pack rocks. I could give two shits. But at least you can have an open and honest conversation. If people want to pay attention to it, they will. And I don't think it is, I don't think it's an accident that traditional media is on the decline and media platforms or programs like this are on the incline. I think people are finally having enough of it because, yeah, it's to say that the, especially in the US, depending on the topic, to say that the coverage is not all encompassing or inclusive would be a drastic understatement. You know, major media sources, it's shocking to me. You can be hearing about the same issue or incident and you won't even recognize they're talking about the same thing because they come at it from such different angles, from a position of having a bias or an intentional influence. And so I just flip back and forth, and I love it when a topic pops up and you can just look back and forth between the organizations to see how differently that they spin it. But the only people who are hurting in that are the ones who actually want to be out there making a difference and supporting organizations like yours because they don't know what to believe.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Very true, mate.
Yeah. What's next for you guys? Other than obviously Haiti, are you guys eyeballing anything else with your organizations?
No, I mean, Haiti's are still our main focus. We're going to keep pushing on with that. Hopefully try and get back over there soon once there is some sort of intervention or it calms down.
Our goal is to create 300 new jobs. So we're just going to keep pushing, keep going forward because, you know, the kids are graduating from the programs quicker than we can create jobs. So that's why we say, you know, if you need a birthday gift for somebody you care about, like visit the domain website, like mean sales is really how we're going to keep pushing this because it's what we really believe in our root is like the business creation is how we're going to, you know, take our best stand against the fight against poverty.
Well, the economy there is not going to be built overnight. I mean, the stuff you're talking about, and again, Billy and I saw this overseas, these are generational problems. Like we can come in there from a tactical perspective and solve or move a chess piece off of the board. But to rebuild the board or change the game, it's generational. And it starts, and again, that's where the curse of the NGO, where they can maybe paint one square of a chessboard, but it's not enough. You need the whole board and you need time to develop the pieces and kind of figure out what game you're going to play. So I think your approach to it is pretty awesome. Where can we point people who are interested? I know we briefly talked about the websites before, but be respectful of your guys' time just to kind of wrap it up. I'll let you guys close it up with what you would want to leave people with, and then where can we point people to help you guys make a difference?
I would just like to, you know, encourage people to think about Haiti, not just in the few little bits that they're seeing on the media, but like thinking about all of the beautiful things that really do exist. Haiti used to be called the Pearl of the Antilles. It's a beautiful Caribbean island. And, you know, we hope and pray that it will be that again someday. And if you want to support us, you can definitely check out reboglobally.org. If you're passionate about education and job training, those donated dollars go straight to the kids in Haiti. And, you know, and we probably have an entire Haitian staff. So we have 9 Haitian employees at Rebo Globally. That's completely Haitian run. And if you want to buy a nice leather gift, please visit domain.com and make a purchase because that has a lot of impact, probably more impact than I could even convey on this podcast. So thanks for giving us the chance to share that with people. It's really important for our work.
Look, go on the website, but do your due diligence. Have a look at it. Follow it through and see what we do, what we've done and where it goes, you know, and feel good about what you're doing to support. And please do support. So thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you guys for taking the time, and I hope that it has the impact that I think it will.
Yeah, it's really great to meet you, and I really appreciate you. We've been watching some of your podcasts before, and it's really nice to see what you're doing and giving us a voice and giving other people like us a voice. So
it's good.
Yeah, thanks again. It really means a lot to us.
If you want to find out more about Julie and Billy's work, you can go to rebuildglobally, that is all one word, all spelled normally, .org. Remember to put the .org on there instead of the .com. And you can go to dumas.com. Now, if you're like me and you had to force me to spell that, I wouldn't be able to. So let me help you out. DEUXMAINS.com. And to make it even easier, we're going to put links in the show notes. So instead of trying to figure that out and type it into your iPhone or computer, just scroll on down and click on it. Thanks again for listening to Change Agents, an Ironclad original. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode.